Welcome to Greek Club.
Thank you.
We are just starting Matthew chapter 2 and the verse 1, which is the familiar but interesting account of the appearance of the Magi in Jerusalem. And so let's just kind of dive right in chapter 2, verse 1, and read a little Greek. So we start, Tu de Jesu genethentas en Bethlehem tes Judaias en hemerais Herodu tu basileos. We stop there with a comma. Matthew likes to start paragraphs with a genitive absolute. He does this, I can't tell you how many times, but it's pretty frequent. And that's what we have here at the beginning. We could probably say that the name Jesus is sort of fronted for emphasis. Usually in a Greek sentence or a clause, the first element is a little bit on the emphatic side. So we have the participle genethentos. This is from genao that we saw about 41 times in the genealogy. And it's the aorist participle passive, masculine singular nominative. The pattern would actually go genethes, and then it goes to a third declension pattern. Then it goes thentos, thenti, thenta. So this is aorist participle passive, masculine singular genitive. And then tu Jesu, give thanks for the article, is a genitive referent for the participle. So literally, Jesus being born, or being begotten in Bethlehem of Judea in the days, which days? The days of Herod. Herod who? Herod the king. And if you wanted to smooth it out, you could probably give this genitive absolute. And again, remember, genitive absolutes are just predicate position participles. And so all the translational options, causal, temporal, concessive, conditional, that you learned in Veltz chapter 20, right, or some other book, are applicable. Here, a temporal translation works well. Since it's aristem, it's normally one step back in time from the main verb, which we haven't got to yet, but which is aorist. So we'll do it temporally. So after Jesus had been begotten in Bethlehem of Judea. And when did that happen? In the days of Herod the king. Okay? And now we finally get to the main clause in 2:1. We have Matthew's well-loved particle, idu, which I think should be translated, even look or behold, because Matthew uses it to structure his pericopes fairly frequently. Look, magi, where are they from? You can take the prepositional phrase apa anaphalon as adjectival. Magi, from the east. The noun anaphale literally means rising. And when it's used in the plural, it's often translated east. We'll see in a second that it's in the singular, when it probably shouldn't be translated in a directional kind of way. So look, magi from the east, par egenanta. This is from paragenomai. It's a deponent verb. So again, you have the n-ta ending, but an active meaning. And paragenomai just means to show up or to appear. So magi from the east appeared in, literally, into Jerusalem. And they were saying, Legantus has as its referent magi, because the participle is masculine plural nominative, and magi is masculine plural nominative. Again, it's like the jigsaw puzzle. You got to fit the connections together. And now we have a direct quote from the magi. But let me stop at verse 1 and see if there's any questions or comments.
Is magi a borrowed word, or is it a Hebrew origin?
That's a good question. A magus.
Because we have Simon the magi.
I think it's a Greek word, Tim. It's not a Hebrew or Aramaic word. I think it's a Greek word, yeah. The without going into it, the one pericope where magi occur prominently in the Septuagint is, I think it's in Daniel 2, where the sorcerers of the king can't interpret the vision, but only Daniel can. So, and for a recently published and slightly controversial treatment of the Magi, see a big blue book. But again, we work. This is Greek club, right? So, yeah. Yeah. I do think it's not helpful to translate it wise men, because that prejudices the issue. I think Magi. I think just keep it Magi. And then you have people asking, well, who are Magi? And you say, they're pagan sorcerers.
Where are they from? Do you have any?
The guess is, the easy guess is Babylon, right? But nobody actually knows where they're from. Okay. They're Apa Anath alone. They're from the east, right? Right. So, and at this point, if you want to sing We Three Kings of Orient Are, to make yourself feel better, that'd be great. We will not record that, however, in Greek Club. Good. Other questions about the language of Jerusalem? Anything? Okay. Good. Verse 2. Now we get the direct code. Legantes. Pu estin ha tekthes basileus ton iudaion. Edemengar autu tan astera ente anatole kai eothamen proskunesai auto. So pu is an interrogative particle. It means where. Where is, and I want to translate this, the king of the Jews who has been born. Not, where is the one who has been born as king of the Jews. In other words, I think the participle is in attributive position. The reason I think that is not that Matthew won't put two nouns in apposition with a substantized participle as one of the nouns. He does do that. But if you translate it, where is the one who has been born as king of the Jews, then it's odd that the noun king does not have an article, because of the Jews has an article. And again, the normal pattern is if you have a Greek noun followed by a genitive modifier, they'll either both have the article or they both won't have the article. And so it's kind of a toss-up, but I think I want to take that tekthes. Now there again, that's actually a hard form. It's from anybody?
Tikto.
Tikto. And it's the aorist participle passive. And then the article helps you the rest of the way. Masculine, singular, nominative. And so it's in attributive position between the article and the noun king. Right? So the having been born king of the Jews. So where is the king of the Jews who has been born? For, the Magi go on, Edamen, this is just from Horao, which goes Horao Opsamai Edan, or Idan. And so this is just an aorist indicative active, first plural. For we saw of him the star, his star, Ente Anatole, in its rising. Or you could probably translate, when it appeared. But it's not, as I think the King James says, we saw his star in the east. It's probably when it happened. Because I think if you read the narrative, what you've got is an appearing and disappearing and reappearing star. I think the most natural reading, at least, is that the star appeared, the Magi made their journey, but the star wasn't there anymore. Because Matthew will say in verse 9, look, the star which they saw in the east began to go ahead of them. So anyway, we saw his star in the rising, or in its rising, and another aorist indicative, eothamen, from Erkamai, we came for this purpose. Proskunesai is the aorist infinitive active from proskuneo, which can be variously translated worship, pay homage, bow the knee, and so forth. And it takes a dative object, and that's why you have to pay homage to him, auto. Historically, it seems pretty unlikely that the Magi think that Jesus is God, right? So historically, it probably isn't a smart idea to translate worship. Now, this is theology, but are the Magi kind of a type of the Gentiles who will come to worship Christ? Of course they are, right? But historically, those guys, however many there were, are not, probably not thinking, oh, this is the true God or something like that. They just think it's the King of the Jews, and they're right. So
yes. They're claiming it's his star.
It's his star, right.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that they would call it his star.
Yep.
And yet they not connecting anything with that.
Well, again, that's part of the problem of what we don't know about the Magi, right? We simply don't know much about them. Yeah. Yeah. Now, they're very impressed with this King of the Jews who has been born. I mean, they've traveled, we don't know exactly from where, but I mean, they didn't hop on the metro, you know. So something of great significance has happened.
So something in the past, maybe, that we don't know anything about, maybe...
We don't know.
We don't know.
Yeah. See a recently published commentary. Right, yeah. But the Greek, at least, is pretty good. And the infinitive probably expresses what? You talk about the... Yeah, purpose. We have come for this purpose to worship him. Yeah, Mel.
Two questions. Where we've come to see the one who has been born King of the Jews, you kind of switch that around. Does it make any difference in meaning?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. No, it's just a sort of a grammar point.
And then the other question is, you're saying that you think the star was not visible all the time while they were traveling.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's hard to be absolutely certain, but the fact that in verse 9, Matthew sort of dramatically reintroduces the star. Right? So anyway. See you recently. Oh, never mind. I'll stop. Okay, let's get...
With Old Testament, do we have any verses that... The theory has always been that if these guys are from Babylon, they're going from the writings that Daniel and others left behind.
Right, right.
Is there anything that talks about
Numbers?
Maybe the star?
Numbers 25. Tim, you know that citation from memory about
the... Well, the Balaam.
Yeah, the Balaam Oracle, right.
Oracle.
Right, right.
That's kind of where it's traditionally thought.
Yeah, today. Yeah. Yeah, see a recently published.
The Jonah one?
That's right. Yeah, Jonah, exactly. Yeah, that's good, very good. All right, but this is Greek Club, not Theology Club, so Exegesis Club. Good, verse 3. And we'll do 3 and 4 together because that's a sentence. Akousaste ha basileus Herodes et tarachte kai pasa Yerusalima met autu. Kai, sun agagon pantas tus archieres, kai grammates tu lau, epunthaneta par auton, pu hokristas genatai. So Matthew starts with a participle, aorist participle from akuo, when the king, comma, Herod, had heard, etarachthe, from tarasso to trouble, eye trouble, and this is aorist indicative passive, third singular. He was troubled. And, easily enough, when Herod gets upset, everybody around him gets upset, and all Jerusalem with him, translate, was troubled. And, now another participle, this is from sun ago. It's the third principal part of ago is agagon. So this is an aorist participle, active, masculine, singular nominative, from sun ago. It's like you get the extra agag in there. And gathering, after he had gathered, all the chief priests, so the direct object of the participle is all the chief priests and scribes, both those nouns are accusative plural, of the people, epunthaneta, this is from, you had to look this one up, punthanomai, it's deponent. So again, you see the ta ending, the middle passive ending, but it has an active meaning. It means to inquire. And it's not an aorist indicative, it's got the present stem, punthan, with a temporal augment, so it's an imperfect. He, what, began to inquire, was inquiring. There's a strong emphasis in this text about Herod trying to figure out exactly where this child is so he can snuff him, right? And that's part of the in a sense, the plot or the divine drama of this text. So he began to inquire from them. Herod doesn't know his Bible very well, so he has to ask his professional scholars. And here's what he's inquiring: where the Christ is being born, literally. You can probably give this a futuristic cast to it. So, quote, where will the Christ be born? Again, from Genao. And the tie ending there is a genuine passive ending. So you translate Christ as the subject and give it a passive meaning, where the Christ is being born. Okay? So Herod is trying to find out the place. And then in the verses after the Micah quote, he'll find out the time. See? Because he needs to know where to go send his soldiers, and he needs to know how many babies to kill. And it's really a very dramatic scene, and it's very familiar to us, so I think we can kind of gloss over it.
So the present tense can be used in the sense that we use the English present time. I am.
Yeah.
For the future.
Yeah, tomorrow I am going to the store. Exactly, yeah. And it's called, you got to have a label for everything, the futuristic present. Yeah, yep, pretty common.
Very good.
Yes. Yeah, John the Baptizer says in chapter 3, every tree that does not bear fruit is being cut down.
Yeah,
yeah, right. But it normally translated will be cut down. Right. Yep. Good. Questions about the grammar or the syntax or anything? 3 and 4. Good. Okay, let's forge ahead then. Verse 5. And we'll do 6 as well to get the Old Testament citation. Hoide apon auto en Bethlehem tes Judaias. Hutosgar gegraptai dia tu prophetu. Kai su Bethlehem ge Yuda. Udamos elachiste e en tois hegemasi Yuda. Exugar ex eleusitai hegumenos. Hustin poimane. Excuse me, poimane, tan la'anmu, tan Israel. Verse 5 begins with a common device that you see in the Gospels. The Greek pronoun, the Greek article was originally a pronoun. And sometimes it has pronominal characteristics, especially when you're in narrative and you've had the subject of one clause and you want to quickly change to a different subject. And you'll have article, typically article, nominative, da. And so you translate it with a pronoun. And or but he, in this case it's plural, and or but they. So hoi da, the hoi is actually acting like a pronoun, even though it's only the article. So you translate but they, or and they, apon, said to him, quote, in Bethlehem of Judea. So this is where the Christ is or will be born. In Bethlehem of Judea. Why? Because this way it stands written, or it has been and is written. Gegraptai is the perfect indicative passive of grapho. It is written in a written state through the prophet, and now we get what is actually a composite Old Testament citation. Most of it is more or less from Micah 5, but the final clause is probably from 2 Samuel 5, as you can see in the side note. And this is a pretty common phenomenon, both in the New Testament and in its context, where you'll conflate two Old Testament citations together and attribute them to one Old Testament source. So just the grammar is pretty straightforward in the Old Testament citation. And you, comma, Bethlehem, comma, land of Judah. So you is the subject of the verb in the next line. Bethlehem and land are in apposition to you. So you, comma, Bethlehem, comma, land of Judah. Udamos is an adverb that you had to look up. It means by no means. And this is actually Matthew's inspired interpretation of the Old Testament citation, because there is nothing in either the Septuagint or the Masoretic text that corresponds to "by no means." Okay. But I think you can reasonably argue that he's bringing out sort of the impact of the prophecy. So by no means, least you are. If you're tired and have had a bad day, it's hard to spot the verb. But the verb is actually a, with the smooth breathing and the circumflex. That's not if. It's actually the present indicative active second singular of the linking verb. And least, then, is a predicate nominative. It's an adjective, and it's modifying the subject. You are by no means least. And then the prepositional phrase, among the rulers of Judah, or the leaders of Judah, hegemaze is an evil third declension noun, and it's the dative plural. So once again, you're thankful for the article, right? Tois. As apparently Dr. Shuckard routinely says, the article is your bestest friend, and it can help you parse, right? So, among the rulers of Judah, for, next line, exu from you, and now we actually do have a future indicative middle deponent from Erchemai, excuse me, from ex-Erchemai. So this is just a ex-Eleusetai, will go out a leader guy. Hegumenos is a participle from hegeomai. It's a present participle active, it's actually middle deponent, masculine singular nominative. It's acting like a noun. The one who rules. So, for from you, the one who rules will go out. Hustis, this is a pronoun, it's most of the time it's just like hus. And in older Greek, it sometimes has a different nuance of meaning. You can look it up in the lexicon. Here it might have a little bit of emphasis, but it could just be who. And it's just a combination of hus and tis. Right? And you just see it kind of sprinkled throughout the New Testament. But you can basically regard it as a relative pronoun. Poimane is an evil liquid stem verb. Poimino. This is actually the future indicative active third singular. And believe it or not, if you care this much, a sign of that is the circumflex over the last syllable. If you don't care that much, you just point on it with your mouse and it parses it, right? but you could also tell because the stem has changed. It's poimino, and this is poimane. That's actually a future indicative active third singular. And I know that because I'm so pious and because I have to teach elementary Greek. Who will shepherd my people, namely Israel. So Israel then is in apposition to the direct object, my people. Okay?
I have a question.
Yeah, Tim.
By you saying in verse 6 that was the interpretation of Matthew, and I'm assuming that the line before it, the Houtos gar gegraptai dia tu prophetu, you're interpreting it not the words of the advisors, but Matthew's thinking, so that this quote actually ends at, and they said to him in Bethlehem of Judea.
Oh, well, actually, that's a good question. Not necessarily. And, Dr. Seleska is asking if Udamos is inserted by Matthew in the quote, does that mean that the scribes of Herod, their words stop in the middle of verse 5? That's what you're asking. To be honest, I'm not sure I've ever asked that question before. Yeah. Ultimately, Matthew is responsible for the form, you know, of the citation. And he does do this, as you know, you guys all probably know, the New Testament writers don't always quote the Old Testament verbatim, right? Sometimes it's very close. Sometimes it is straight from the... And Matthew is like this. Sometimes his quotes seem to come straight from the Masoretic text. Other times they tend to cite the Septuagint. sometimes he's actually apparently doing his own translation, and there's a certain amount of freedom involved there. So that's actually a good question, Tim.
We'll have to see if the pattern can be
right. Good luck.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's a well-plowed field, Matthew's Old Testament citation.
Yeah.
That's a well-plowed field. So
it will be dealt with in the second edition.
Not even close. Actually, there is a cautious and extremely well-informed discussion of this problem in a recently published commentary on Jonah. Right. So, good. Okay, maybe we'll just get a couple of lines in and then we'll stop. Verse 7. Then, Matthew likes the word tutta, then Herod, Lothra, now we've seen that before, Joseph secretly was going to divorce Mary, right? So it's just an adverb. Then Herod secretly, kalesas tus magus, e kribosen, par auton, ton kronon, tu phainomenu asteros. Now kalesas is the aorist participle of kaleo. And let's go ahead and just take this here as the so-called bang-bang or piggyback participle, aorist participle, a kribosen, aorist indicative main verb. So we'll just translate it. Then Herod secretly called the Magi and akribaod. He accurately ascertained. See, again, first he's found out where. Now he's found out when. From them, the time of the being manifested star, or a little more smoothly, of the star which was appearing. And I actually, believe it or not, think that you can maybe put an inceptive translation to that present stem participle, the time of the star which began to appear. And the only reason I want to do that is because Matthew makes a big deal, as I said in verse 9, about, I think, the star reappearing. Because he says in verse 9, they saw it in its rising, Eris, they saw it. But now it reappears when they head start heading towards Bethlehem.
Did you say kept appearing?
Yes, I mean, it could be.
It could be that. Okay.
It could indeed be that, right. It's actually a little surprising that it's a present stem participle, right. And it's 12:30, and I don't know, maybe we should kind of stop in mid-sentence, and we'll pick up next Tuesday at Matthew chapter 2, verse 8. Good.